It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The FBI did exactly what my fellow citizens would want them to do when they got the information they got, and that it has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
Sandy Rios with you. That's Trey Gowdy. And for those of you who still hold the opinion that Trey Gowdy is a reliable person in terms of his opinions and remarks, let me set that record straight. I've mentioned before many times to you, but I probably should say again, because Trey is so convincing. And, you know, he must have been a fearless prosecutor, and I have seen him in the House, you know, interacting, and so have you. That's why many of you think, gosh, he's great, because when he interrogates someone, he does such a good job, and he gets right to the point. But for those of us in Washington closer to the action, shall we say, closer to the problem, we recognize that for whatever reason, Trey Gowdy is all over the map. Sometimes he says good things and sometimes he says ridiculous things. And what he actually does is some really bad things. I'll give you an example. When he was overseeing the Benghazi committee hearing, and by the way, the only reason there was an investigation in the House over Benghazi was because of a discharge petition, which many of us pushed. They got enough signers, conservative Republicans in the House, to finally sign this petition to force John Boehner to form a committee to investigate. And when they did, he appointed Trey Gowdy. And everybody thought, wow, this is just great, right? But I can tell you firsthand that the experts, the people on the front lines, really dozens of people who were injured in Benghazi, whose names you've never known, people who have information, people who are experts on this, people who've been following it, were never interviewed. They were not allowed to talk to that committee or to Trey Gowdy. So it was pretty much rubber stamped, his committee. It was worthless, honestly. And so when you hear him speak, remember that you have to take it with a grain of salt. I want you to listen to what he said one more time. Let's listen.
The FBI did exactly what my fellow citizens would want them to do when they got the information they got, and that it has nothing to do with Donald Trump.
See, that's just so disingenuous. I mean, if you've paid any minimal attention to the investigation into the alleged collusion of the Trump campaign with the Russians, you know that that's not true. We know that James Comey assured Donald Trump early on, before he was fired, that Trump was not the object of the investigation. But we also now know from email between Peter Strzok and his mistress Lisa Page that that wasn't true. This was an insurance plan. They did put a mole, a spy, in the Trump campaign. They did. Remember, I told you he actually paid Alex Papadopoulos. He contacted Alex, this young kid, 24-ish, and paid him $3,000 to right out of the clear blue sky to write a paper on something international, and then paid his way to London, where he was fed Alex Papadopoulos, who was, you know, according to the way the left reports it, you know, key to the Trump campaign. Not quite. Kind of young. Kind of not really in the center of things. And so they set Alex up and they bring another person in to tell him, they set this all up, that that the Russians had Hillary Clinton's email. You might remember that so many of her email were lost, that she destroyed hard drives. Of course, that's no big deal, remember? That's no big deal. Comey told us that you know, no reasonable person would prosecute her for destroying email and evidence in a case. But, you know, I'm sorry, I'm off the track. So this informant, this spy on the Trump campaign, sends Alex to England And there they feed him this information that the Russians had Hillary Clinton's email, and then they arrange for him to have a dinner with an Australian ambassador, Downer, who they got drunk together. Now, doesn't that make sense that the ambassador, Australian ambassador, would get drunk with a 24-year-old young, loosely affiliated person with the Trump campaign? And during that time, allegedly, Alex told Downer that there was the Russians had Hillary Clinton's email. So that is the basis upon which the FBI said that they were. That's how they began their investigation. And we know now that they started it a long time before that. They paid this informant, this spy, lots of money. You remember that the Adam Lovinger that I interviewed last Friday was the one that whistleblew that little transaction where there's an entity at the Pentagon that's kind of a slush fund for the Obama administration where they would pay people, and it was out of this slush fund that this spy was paid, I think, $400,000. I could go on and on. I could go on and on. But I want to point you to an article Andy McCarthy just wrote this morning. Again, Andy was our guest yesterday. He's a former federal prosecutor and really has more knowledge about this than almost anyone, really. And so I want to read to you what Andy had to say in his article this morning. Trey Gowdy and Marco Rubio evidently paid little attention to the testimony before their own committees on how Obama officials made the Trump campaign the subject of a counterintelligence investigation. There's a lot of things. I'm going to skip around in the article. He goes on to say, now that this ploy has blown up on the Justice Department and the FBI, these agencies, the ones that went out of their way and outside their guidelines to announce to the world that the Trump campaign was under investigation, want you to know the president and his campaign were not investigated at all. No siree. What could possibly have made you imagine such a thing? He goes on to talk about how they don't want us to use the word spy. They're doing backflips to try to convolute what actually happened. In fact, he says the FBI did run an informant. Spy is such an icky word. This is what James Clapper said on a Sunday show. He admitted that. They ran this spy at Trump campaign officials, but you must understand that this was merely to investigate Russia. Cross his heart, it had nothing to do with the Trump campaign. No, no, no. Indeed, they only used an informant because, bet you didn't know this, doing so is the most benign, least intrusive mode of conducting an investigation. Me? This is Andy writing. I'm thinking the tens of thousands of convicts serving lengthy sentences due to the penetration of their schemes by informants would beg to differ. And so I want to go on because he addresses Trey Gowdy directly. Gowdy's fire truck pulled into Fox News Tuesday night for an interview by Martha McCallum. An able lawyer, the congressman is suddenly on a mission to protect the Justice Department and the FBI from further criticism. Rather than address the campaign, he repeatedly insisted that Donald Trump personally was never the target of the FBI's investigation. The only target, Gowdy maintains, was Russia. This is a dodge on at least two levels, and he goes on to extrapolate that. It's a long article. He says if Gowdy had been paying attention, he must know that precisely because the Trump campaign was under investigation, top FBI officials had qualms of conscience over Comey's plan to give Trump a misleading assurance that he personally was not under investigation. If this has slipped Gowdy's mind, perhaps Rubio could lend him the transcript of Comey's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. In particular, a section Rubio seems not to remember either. And he goes on to sort of kind of conclude some things about both of these guys. He addresses what I mentioned to you earlier. He alludes to this Benghazi committee and how Trey Gowdy so poorly handled that and shut it down. He says, in the interview with Ms. McCallum, Representative Gowdy further confused matters by stressing Trump's observation in a phone conversation with Comey on March 30th, 2017, that it would be good to find out if underlings in his campaign had done anything wrong. This, according to Gowdy, means Trump should be pleased rather than outraged by what the FBI did. By steering an informant at three campaign officials, we're to believe that the Bureau was doing exactly what Trump suggested. Such a spacious argument. So disappointing to hear it from someone who clearly knows better. So I just wanted to land on that a little bit hard because it's pretty disgusting to me to hear Trey Gowdy make a statement like that. And I just want you to know he's not the good guy you think he is. And I don't want you to have faith in someone who's not worthy of your trust. Now, interestingly enough, Jay, you know that yesterday the president said once again that he wished he had not hired Sessions. That was part of the news stories last night. And so interesting interaction yesterday then between Bill Himmer and Jason Chaffetz. This is clip nine. Let's listen.
On the Jeff Sessions tweets, there were three of them. Here's the third one. There were, he's quoting Trey Gowdy. There were lots of really good lawyers in the country. He could have picked somebody else, end quote. And I wish I did. Jeff Sessions, has he got a target back on him again or not?
Jeff Sessions is the attorney general, is there in name only. He's absolutely worthless. The sooner the president names a new attorney general, the better. He should never have recused himself. He didn't need to in a counterintelligence operation. And we have major systemic problems at the FBI, and he's nowhere on document production, nowhere on these things. I mean, you got Rod Rosenstein running the place. It's time to get rid of Jeff Sessions. A long time ago.
You know, that sounds great if you have the opinion, and I do too. I share it. It killed me when he recused himself. I think he got terrible advice from somebody who was untrustworthy. I think he was being set up. He came in, you know, thinking that he was going to really clean up the Justice Department. And believe me, he has on so many levels that you're not hearing about. But Jason Chaffetz knows, and so does Trey Gowdy. They know that, in fact, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee has said publicly they are not going to spend the time to put in another attorney general. Not going to do it. And the Senate has to confirm them if something should happen that Jeff Sessions step aside or if the president should fire him. The Judiciary Committee is not going to cooperate. And even if they did cooperate, because that's Senator Grassley who heads that committee, The Democrats are never going to allow through a good appointment. Who do you think is going to get through? Who do you think? Trey Gowdy, maybe? Lord help us. So, and you know, maybe that's what he's angling for. I don't know. They both know that, that no good person is going to be appointed. Jeff Sessions is with us on every issue. I think he made a really big mistake when he recused himself. And I think if you ask me what I think should happen, they should get rid of Rod Rosenstein. He could be replaced. He could be replaced. And Jeff Sessions could remain recused because in his conscience, he feels he must. So Rod Rosenstein can be fired and someone else in his position running the show. They wouldn't have to be confirmed by Congress. But anyway, it's just, yeah. So there it is. Now, this is interesting because Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, who has really, his hands are so dirty in this Russian collusion case. He is one of the ones that was working behind the scenes. Now we know because of memos and things with Fusion GPS, which created that phony, that tabloid dossier on Donald Trump. Mark Warner is up to his ears in that mess. So it was interesting to hear him say what he did yesterday. This is clip 12.
People have kind of got exhaustion from the day-to-day back and forth of this story. I think the American public will be tired of it if this is not wound down in this calendar year.
You see how this works? See, because I think Senator Warner is probably a little concerned about some things that might come out, so he's ready to get it over with. Oh, man, is Washington corrupt or what? I want to go to an email really quickly. This is from Dean. He said, it's time to put Andy McCarthy out to pasture. I was angered and severely disappointed at his retreat on prosecution of Comey, Mueller, and others who have an entire career of criminal misconduct. McCarthy has done great work in the past, but we're tired of the long defeat. McCarthy is too close to the swamp to be a significant use. My prayer is that he and you will be filled with new strength and fight to win. You know, Dean, let me just, if I said yesterday anything to indicate that to you that I'm finished fighting to get justice, you just don't know me. No, I might realistically say that in this lifetime, there will not be justice the way we want to see it. But do you think I'm going to stop fighting for it and talking about it? No, and neither is Andy. It is very true that he's close to James Comey and Robert Mueller, and I think that's caused him to be very cautious in his remarks. But boy, in his writings, he takes off the gloves. Andy's a trustworthy person. His friendship may have made him be kinder to those men than he should have, but doesn't mean we're not working to make it right. So don't misunderstand. All right, be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, I'm Will Addison.
And I'm Miki.
From Airing the Addisons on Urban Family Talk. We'd like to invite you to the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference coming up August 17th and 18th.
The list of speakers is amazing. We have Ryan Baumberger of the Radiance Foundation, Dr. Clarence Shuler of Building Lasting Relationships, Abraham Hamilton III, Pastor Bert Harper and his wife Jan, Stacy Washington, Lonnie Poindexter, Pastor Dexter Sanders, and we'll be there too.
There's a direct attack by the enemy on marriage and family, and babies in the womb are treated like political footballs instead of life. We want to encourage and equip the body of Christ to fight for the restoration of the family. If we can get our families on track, a lot of society's problems could be solved. The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is from Urban Family Communications, a division of the American Family Association. You can learn more and register at urbanfamilytalk.com.
Okay, here's the big question with regard to any big decision. Is this going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Yeah, but does it actually work? So did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery. The bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works. And it's so easy to get your questions answered. Why not? You can call right now. Just hit *345. That's *345. *345.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's nothing better than a frosty cold glass of lemonade to quench that summertime thirst, and many enterprising boys and girls across the fruited plain are setting up lemonade stands to cash in on the hot weather. Two little boys in Denver decided to use their profits to help a less fortunate child in a foreign country. Unfortunately, the Denver Police Department shut down their lemonade stand. Turns out you have to have a permit. Jennifer Knowles said she had no idea her sons had violated the law. They were just trying to do a good deed. But there's a bit more to the story. The Knowles family set up their lemonade stand outside the Denver Arts Festival, not too far from where a licensed vendor was selling lemonade. So it's understandable why the licensed lemonade vendor was feeling a bit sour. It would be like letting your kid sell hamburgers on the sidewalk in front of McDonald's. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We're also very grateful to be joined by Senator Lamar Alexander. Lamar. And Senator Bob Corker.
Isn't that something? You know, that was, sorry. Senator Bob Corker being introduced by President Trump in Nashville a couple of nights ago didn't go so well, and I think that's pretty amazing. You wonder why Bob Corker's not running for Senate again. Well, I'm thinking, you know, that it may be because of that. Marsha Blackburn is running to replace him and is doing very well, so she went on to speak at the rally, but Bob Corker stepped aside because that's the way the people of Tennessee, at least the people in that audience, feel about him. And, you know, I'm heartened by that because I would like to see that happen to just about, not just about, I'd like to see that happen to every single rhino, no, I don't even want to use that word, corrupt senator on either side of the aisle. We must drain the swamp. We really must. And so the people of Tennessee figured it out in regard to their Senator Bob Corker. Now, there is a primary coming up in six states next Tuesday. And next Monday, we will be covering the various states that are involved in this. One is Montana. I'm going to do this by memory and get myself in trouble. I think it's South Dakota, Montana, New Jersey. I can't remember off the top of my head. Mississippi and Alabama. Thank you very much. Mississippi and Alabama. But in the Montana, so for those of you in those states, please pay attention now and find out who your candidates are and go to the AFA.net action, AFAaction.net. Go to our voter guide. We'll put that on our Facebook page again and enter your information and you can get information on the candidates in your area. All right, but I want you to hear Dan Springer reporting on this Montana Senate race because this is really getting interesting. Let's listen.
Two-term Montana Senator John Tester landed squarely in President Trump's crosshairs when he sank the president's personal doctor's nomination to head the Department of Veteran Affairs. One of the Republicans running in the primary in hopes of unseating the Democrat Tester is combat veteran Troy Downing, who served two tours in Afghanistan.
He used unsubstantiated claims to ruin the reputation of somebody that never had the chance to sit down and be asked hard questions.
Downing, a political outsider and businessman, compares himself to President Trump, who crushed Hillary Clinton in Montana by 20 points. But all four Republicans running in the primary embraced Trump and most of his policies. The best known among them is State Auditor Matt Rosendale. He's endorsed by Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and has the financial backing of GOP heavyweights Club for Growth and Freedom Works. But Rosendale, who moved to Montana from Maryland 16 years ago, is accused by opponents of being a carpetbagger, a label he dismisses.
I've hauled sugar beets from the fields, and I have worked cows in the fall beside my neighbors, and I've driven steel T-posts into the parched earth after a prairie fire has come through.
Former state legislator and retired district court judge Russ Fagg is attacking Rosendale for his opposition to the death penalty. Fagg would even like to see it applied when illegal immigrants are caught smuggling meth and heroin.
99% of it, at least, comes across the border illegally with these Mexican gangs. That's the problem I'm trying to address. And one of the tools that we need to use to address it is the death penalty.
Rounding out the field is orthopedic surgeon and state senator Al Olszewski, who just wants to defeat John Tester.
All four of us have the opportunity to win against Senator Tester as long as we can play our strengths.
Boosting the Republicans' hope of picking up the Senate seat here in Montana is the fact that the Green Party is also running a candidate against John Tester in November. And while he still has plenty of campaign cash on hand, Tester is spending a lot of it in the wake of the feud with President Trump.
Okay, that was Dan Springer talk on Fox talking about the test. Now, John Tester, of course, is the incumbent Democrat, and you heard it, but I'll repeat it, that he is the one who repeated rumors about Dr. Ronny Jackson, who was President Trump's personal physician. He was also Barack Obama's personal physician. I think George W. Bush's. Nothing but accolades from those men. President Trump wanted him to head the VA. And then John Tester went public with this really trashy and false information on Ronny Jackson and caused him, of course, a lot of angst. This is the story now. They tried to destroy people, and he ended up pulling out of the nomination process. And so John Tester is now the incumbent in Montana, and you heard the description of what's happening there. So that's just an example of the kinds of battles that are being fought. So I got an email from Matt. By the way, I love your email and Facebook posts, even if you don't agree with me. I really appreciate you taking the time to write, and I do read them. This is from Matt. He says he's from Washington State. He said the primaries in Washington State are not until August, but the only so-called, the only good person challenging the Democrat Maria Cantwell, the only Republican challenging Democrat Maria Cantwell for the Senate is a man named Joy Gibson, who stands for gay marriage, the legalization of marijuana, and a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants in the United States. What do we do? You know, Matt, this has been a problem for a long time. I'm from a state that had Dick Durbin and Barack Obama, so I know a little bit about this as their senators. This is what we can do. If you can't, in good conscience, support either candidate, now sometimes you have to choose the lesser of two evils. So that's sometimes what we have to do because this is not church. It's not a deacon. This is a public forum, and we have to deal with a lot of other factors. So the standards are not the same as they are in church. But if we can reach those standards, we try for that too. But if there's no one that you can in good conscience vote for in your state, This is what I would do. I would choose one, two, three candidates, good candidates from other states in really tight races where you know a person is really worthy of your support and you want to help them there. Well, you can't vote for them, but this is what you can do. A lot of different things. You can give them money. You can go on their campaign website and you can volunteer. You can make phone calls from Washington State for a candidate in California or in Florida. You can make phone calls for them. There's nothing illegal about that. It's perfectly acceptable. You can actually even take a family trip, take a field trip, and go knock door to door if they're asking for that. You have to coordinate through the campaign. You can do lots of things. You can write letters to the editor in that state, or you can let people know that in that state that you know, family members, relatives, let them know about this candidate. You can do all kinds of things. You can spread the word. So you can get involved in this election because all of the senators affect all of us. You know, it's not like a senator from Washington State doesn't affect me. That's not true. All of their votes affect us whether it comes to the confirmation of judges, whether it comes to these point, you know, getting through the nominees, good nominees. I mean, it makes a huge difference. So that's what you can do. And really, I strongly suggest you consider doing that. Okay, so I want to move to something else. This is really something that came to my attention yesterday afternoon, and let's do it this way. I want you to hear Andrea Mitchell interact with the former Republican strategist Rick Tyler. Now, Rick is, I'll tell you about Rick in a minute, but you just listen.
Rick Tyler, as a Republican, watching the president attacking a man who is dying of a fatal form of brain cancer. I just watched the HBO documentary For Whom the Bell Tolls the other night. It is heartbreaking to see him do that. And again today on the White House grounds, he was not at a political rally. After not criticizing his own staff person for that really corrosive thing that she said about John McCain. What is going on with the character of this man?
Well, the first thing is that the president said there that it cost our country a lot. This country could not pay back John McCain for everything that he's done and went through, not only his service in Vietnam, being an American prisoner of war, his service in the United States Senate, and frankly, his leadership. And he doesn't hold a candle to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is a classless person. Donald Trump, and I see he's now echoed Roseanne Barr, is also a classless person. And so this is the classless person's party that he's leading here. And I don't think that is going to bode well either for his legacy or in the short term in these midterm elections.
All right, so there you go. So John McCain is a war hero, therefore you can't criticize him. And that brings me to what I want to tell you. Now, I've said this before, but I have to tell you, when I was on the air in Chicago, this was when I first started out, and I remember whatever the situation, John McCain was in the news, because he's been in the Senate since the 80s. You do know that, right? It's all he's ever done. Except for his military service, but that's the only, when he came back, that's his work life. He was elected to the Senate with the help of his wife's family's money. I think it was Anheuser-Busch money. So that's all John McCain knows, is serving in the Senate. And so whatever the situation was, I remember opening the phone lines in Chicago and having Vietnam vets call in and to tell me, it was news to me at the time, how disgraceful his service was in Vietnam. Now, there were, like Jeremiah Denton, part of the Hanoi 7 or Hanoi 8, who were prisoners of war who never spoke, who were tortured. They were in prison for years there, and they were heroes. But then there was John McCain, who was a tool of the enemy, who spoke, who did recordings for them. I've played them. I think I've played them for you. You can find them online if you want to hear them, where he cooperated with the Viet Cong. And did propaganda videos. Now, look, he was tortured. That's a sad thing. That's a hard reality. But you're not a hero just because you're tortured. You endured something. You lived through it. But I just don't understand how we came to this conclusion. It's not just John McCain. Now he's dying. Who can be happy about that? It's a sad thing. He's dying of a brain cancer. But because a person is terminal, then are sick, and there are other categories, but I'll stay with this one. You cannot criticize them or disagree with them. Everything they say is gold because they're dying. You know, that's not really true. You know, some people are actually really bad people, and they know they're dying. And it doesn't make them saints because they're dying. It gives us sympathy and urgency and probably reveals the tragedy of the ending of their lives. And I've seen, it's amazing to me to see John McCain defiant to the end. You know, he's not able to serve in the Senate. He's caused, they hardly have enough votes, meaning the Republicans, to pass anything. And with his absence, it's even more difficult. So his absence has caused a lot of problems. There's no, now I'm going to defend Mitch McConnell just for 30 seconds. It's rare, right? But truly, without John McCain's vote, without every single Republican vote, it's really hard to pass or approve anything. But John McCain doesn't really care because what he wants is to control who sits in his seat next. So here's the way it plays out. Newsmax reported yesterday, Cindy McCain set to succeed husband in Senate. So here's the deal. If John McCain doesn't step aside from his Senate seat by June 1st, which is like coming up here, like tomorrow, right? Yeah, tomorrow. If he doesn't die before in the next 24 hours, and I'm not asking for that, I'm just telling you the way the law states, then they will. The Arizona people of Arizona will not be able to run another candidate for his seat. And the governor, alas and alack, will have to make an appointment. So the McCain team has visited now with Governor Ducey of Arizona and made it clear that what Trump, the McCain team wants is for Cindy McCain to be appointed to serve in John McCain's place. And if she does that, and if they do that, she'll hold that seat until the end of what would have been his normal cycle, which is another 2 years, and then she'll be up for re-election. Now, you may think of Cindy, she's beautiful. Yes, she's a beautiful woman. But we also know that she is not pro-life, and she's very much pro-gay marriage. I could just tell you those two things. I could also tell you something personal that someone I know well was next to Cindy McCain at a political event when her husband was running, when a staffer did not find a place for her to sit. Like she thought they should have reserved a seat for her. And my friend reported the unleash of expletives, which, as my friend said, would have made Hillary Clinton blush. Cindy McCain is the one that John McCain wants to sit in his seat, and he feels he has the right, the power, he certainly has the power, to control so that the people of Arizona cannot choose. And so here he sits, knowing that he's dying, knowing that he can never come back to the Senate unless God should intervene, and he will not step aside so that there could be an election or someone else can run because he wants to control it and he wants his wife to take his place in this democracy and this place that we have this feeling that we're supposed to be electing our own candidates of our own free will, right? So it's just it's kind of an amazing story, but that's we'll see what happens. June 1st is tomorrow. And that's what Newsmax is reporting. Now, I've heard other people say that they're hearing contradictions on this, that Governor Ducey might actually want to serve in that seat himself. So that's a dilemma for him, isn't it? If he won't appoint the poor widow of John McCain out of an act of, you know, because we're all supposed to bow the knee to him because he's sick. I just, to heck with the country. But that's the report coming out of Newsmax on John McCain at this point in his life. I have so many other things to tell you about, but I think what I'm going to do, I think I'm going to open the phone lines because I've said so many things in the last few days, and I'd like to give you a chance to just talk. I'd love to hear from you. And then I'll pepper some other bits of news in as we talk. 888-589-8840 is the number, 888-589-8840. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The borrower is the slave of the lender. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Newly published information from Lifeway Research shows 77% of self-identified Christians in dozens of states think it's a sin to lend money to someone who can't afford to pay it back. Still, few say payday loans are immoral, and one in six Christians has admitted to taking out a high-interest payday loan. The federal government's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says the typical two-week payday loan charges the equivalent of a 400% interest rate. These sharks prey on the poor, elderly, and most vulnerable in society. Sound the alarm and make sure your family, church, and neighborhood steer clear of this vermin.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. This year's annual AFA retreat will be held at the beautiful Big Cedar Lodge near Branson, Missouri. I'm happy to be a part of it along with Abraham Hamilton III, Dr. Ray Pritchard, Ed Vitagliano, and our worship leader, Dennis Jernigan. And I hope to see you there too, along with other supporters of the American Family Association.
Join us for the AFA retreat October 8th through the 11th. For more information or to register, visit afafoundation.net. Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
Why does AFA keep harping on the dangers of the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why? It's because we've looked into the eyes of the mother of a teen suicide victim. Patrice Bright was mom to a normal, happy 14-year-old cheerleader dealing with the challenges any teenager faces. But her outlook on life was apparently darkened after she binge-watched season 1 of 13 Reasons Why. Anna Bright chose to deal with her temporary teen problems with the permanent act of suicide. Several other teens and young adults have made the same choice after watching this show, which glorifies suicide. The American Family Association and others have pointed out the dangers of the program to Netflix. But, apparently motivated by money, Netflix has just released season 2. Our hope is to save teen lives by getting Netflix to pull the series before another tragedy occurs. You can learn more and sign the 13 Reasons Why petition at afa.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump has lately been making a series of extraordinarily important improvements to his defense and foreign policy team. National Security Advisor John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are among the most obvious. But to be effective, such leaders need a cast of highly capable subordinates. Fortunately, last week, Ambassador Bolton brought aboard one tested and proven to be among the best, a career intelligence professional named Fred Flights, to serve in key roles as the National Security Council's Chief of Staff and Executive Secretary. The increasingly shrill and even unhinged attacks currently being mounted on Mr. Flights by the radical left, Sharia supremacists, and their media echo chamber speak volumes about their fear that he'll really help Mr. Trump succeed. Those of us privileged to have worked with Fred at the Center for Security Policy expect from him nothing less. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. Let me just a quick programming note. For the next few days, not tomorrow, but you're going to hear Fred Jackson hosting for me, and then you're going to hear some great best ofs, and then we have a live show on Monday. And so it'll be kind of a potpourri because I'm going to be away for a few days. So you're going to enjoy it very much. I guarantee you we've got some great things planned for you, but I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. By the way, our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Let me share a couple of things with you before I go to the phones. This is from Tess. She says, I enjoy listening to your show on the AFR app as I go about my work at home. I'm thankful to have you as a news source. Then she goes on to mention, refer to the royal wedding, which I felt that the Anglican bishop from the United States really gave the gospel, which is not congruent with his personal opinions before. He's got some really bad positions on gay marriage and other things, which doesn't surprise me. That's the Episcopal Church of America. But I thought in that moment he really did give the gospel, even if he didn't mean to. And she points out to me that she says biblical love can only be lived out when we have turned from sin. He never mentioned sin. There were wonderful facts presented, but not enough to say that he truly shared the whole gospel. And she says a lot more to that. But I just want to say this, Tess, just keep in mind this. If you were to recite to a person that verse that is such a hallmark of evangelism, which is John 3:16, it doesn't mention sin either. It's "for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." I think that maybe it wasn't a full explanation. He didn't talk about sin, but if John 3:16, we consider that giving the gospel, he certainly talked about Jesus dying on our behalf. I thought he said to save us from our sin, but he might not have. He said dying for us. So he gave the gospel whether he even understood the purity of it or an intended to do it in the way that it was done. This is from Leah. She said, "I sit in a parking lot. I leave for work early and sit in a parking lot in the car listening to you every morning here in Central Texas." And that's from Leah. Thank you, Leah. That's just a part. I'm having to jump around. Do you understand that? I guess. This is from Tony. "I began listening about 8 months ago. I wake up on Saturday, disappointed it's Saturday because there's no Sandy Rios in the morning." That's very funny. It's very sweet. It's really fun. I appreciate you guys sharing those fun things. This is from Jimmy. He says, "Let me get this straight. Roseanne tweeted a certain person was the product of a character from Planet of the Apes and the Muslim Brotherhood, and that somehow was a racist statement? But because the subject of her insult was a black woman, it was automatically racial. Somehow I feel more that linking her tweet to her race is more racist than anything Roseanne tweeted. I think Roseanne is so blatantly unracist that she never connected her words with a racist thought or intention. But good old Hollywood and mainstream liberal media couldn't pass on an opportunity to end a successful popular TV show that is actively supportive of Trump." I think Jimmy actually has a very good point there. And Roseanne was the one who tweeted out Zimmerman, the name, the address and home phone number of the Zimmerman family, the George Zimmerman family, after the shooting of Trayvon Martin. And of course, Trayvon's black, George's, Hispanic. That's the one incident I know of her where she obviously was concerned about a shooting of a black young man. So I think Jimmy's probably right about that. All right, I could go on, but I'm going to go to the phone lines, so let's do it. Our phone number is 888-589-8840. In fact, let's go to David because he has something to say about Roseanne. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Yes, to continue with Roseanne's tweet, the woman who was in a tremendous uproar over this, Wanda Sykes, one of the producers, who's
Sykes.
Actually a black woman who's a comedian.
Yeah. Wanda Sykes.
Well, a number of months ago, I can't remember the specifics, but she made in one of her routines, she referred to President Trump as an orangutan.
Yes.
But the liberal left, refuses to even talk about this because it doesn't advance their agenda.
Yeah.
It's very much a double standard.
There's no question about it. Actually, I wish I had had Adam Pohl this morning, the press conference yesterday with, too many names in my head. Sanders. The press secretary for the president, Sanders, whatever first name you can't, I'm just blanking out. Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She said, really put it so well. And she brought up all of the other incidences of hatred, certainly toward the president, that ABC in particular had no trouble with. And she rattled them off beautifully.
If you take the time, and it frustrates me, but periodically, I'll watch the intro of Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, this guy is monotonous. He will not allow Trump to... I mean, Donald Trump could give everybody a free stick of gum, and they'd have a problem with it. You know, they'd find a way to spend it, you know, to spend the situation. You know, these people need to pump their brakes, man.
Yeah, no, then, I know. You know. Yeah, David, it's wrong. It's wrong. But then, of course, this is not, from the left's point of view, their philosophy is whatever it takes to win, that's what we do. It has nothing to do with what's right and wrong. As a matter of fact, David, I'm going to let you go, and I want to just interject a comment. Thank you for bringing that up, of course, and making that point. I was watching, in fact, I recommend it to all of you. There is a special on Joseph Stalin. It's three parts. I don't even know who produced it, to be honest with you, because my husband had recorded it. But at the end of the first element of it, the first series, part of the series, Joseph Stalin, quotes Adolf Hitler. And basically he says, I am relieving you from that age-old restriction called conscience. You are free to murder, kill, lie, cheat, steal, whatever, fill in the blank, whatever it takes to win, that's what we're going to do. Now, that's a very loose rendering, but that's what he said. And Adolf Hitler had said that, and that's what Stalin said. And you have to understand the leftist thinking is whatever it takes to destroy. And they are out to destroy everything. Remember that. And what they don't recognize, of course, I think, is that Satan is the destroyer. Satan is the destroyer. Their father is Satan. They maybe don't even understand why they feel compelled to destroy everything. But that's exactly what's behind this in the deepest sense. Let's go to Levi in Texas. Good morning, Levi.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to challenge your show. And, I mean, I know you can't control all the other programs on this station, but I try to tune into you in the morning sometimes. But it gets so negative with the politics, and it's just so downtrodden. Like, I get it. Politics is a part of life. It's a part of being an American. It's part of being an adult. But, I mean, and this goes both ways. I mean, I'm beginning to even, you know, leftist.
Ooh, Levi, you're cutting out. You're cutting out. Can you walk to a different part or do what you can do to, and then go and back up a sentence? We're negative with politics. Downtrodden is the word you use. Do you use downtrodden all the time when you talk? Levi. We lost him. Okay, if he calls back, put him on. 888-589-8840. Methinks he probably does not say downtrodden, but I wanted to hear his point. Yeah, it's pretty sad, Levi. You know, it reminds me of a scripture in the Old Testament where... Yike, and you're going to get, you Bible scholars will get mad at me for not remembering names, but here I go. But it's an Old Testament story where the advisors were lying to the king. Oh, king, oh, great king, everything's wonderful. The enemy will not prevail. It's all going to be just fine. And the king was horrified that they said that to him. Oh, no, he was fine. And then one of the prophet, whichever prophet it was, came to him and said, no, it's not so fine. Actually, you're going to be defeated. You're going to be killed. Are you going to lose your kingdom, et cetera, et cetera? And the king was furious, and I think the prophet was thrown in prison because he didn't say the right things. You get the principle, right, Levi? That we have to speak the truth. That's what God requires. And I don't know if you had a serious question or if you were setting me up. I'm not sure, but I'd be glad to talk to you sometime, and we'll hash that out further. All right, let's go to Hector in Texas. Good morning, Hector.
Good morning, Sandy. Big fan of the show, so
thank you.
Wanted to say that up front. I wanted to comment on the illegal children that were shown over this past week. You know, because the liberals, they really want to they play both sides. They spin everything, and they want to tug at our hearts. You know, because certainly as Christians, we're not in the mindset of splitting families up. We're all about keeping the family together, which is why we fight for life when it comes to abortion and other biblical standards. But what really what really bothered me about the way they were spinning the immigrant children situation is that, you know, Democrats had the opportunity to provide an alternative solution back in, I want to say it was 2007, and they rejected the legislation that would have allowed basically for children that were, so if illegal immigrants came to the U.S. and fathered children here, then upon being exposed by the government, they would all be deported back to the country of their origin as a family unit. But, you know, Democrats cried foul ball at the mere suggestion that a U.S. citizen could be deported at all or that children be left alone here. So then they created this lose-lose scenario where now you have children being separated from their parents. It's like you can't please them because the alternative, you know, would be a violation of the upholding of U.S. law and sovereignty. See, right. I'm a Mexican-born U.S. citizen, but I went through the formal legalization process. It's cumbersome, but it's doable. And it's not like we were floating in wealth either. You know, we didn't buy our way in. We just basically stood in line like everybody else, but that's the legal process. So you know, Hector, you have to control immigration.
You know what? I'm only pushing you because I just have 2 minutes left. So that's why I'm rushing, because I really would love to hear more of what you have to say. But I do want to know, Hector, then am I assuming correctly that you're not down with this illegal immigration open borders policy that we're enduring right now?
No, I mean, it's a globalist concept that just undermines our sovereignty and our ability to influence the rest of the world for good. Because we are one of the only nations that upholds Christian standards.
Hector, you know what? Could I just say that you are exhibit A of why immigration, make the right kind of immigration, legal immigration, makes this country great. You know, being an American is embracing a set of ideals. It's not race. Has nothing to do with race. It has to do with a common set. Yeah. Well, God bless you.
I absolutely love this country. I mean, the history, how it was founded on the principles of, you know, unalienable rights by our Creator. It's definitively and most, I mean, it's a transcendental pact with the people, the Constitution is. And so, I mean, how could you not support something like that unless you were, again, just trying to break it all down?
Well, exactly. And that's exactly the point. Hector, please call in again. We can talk longer because I enjoyed talking to you and I loved what you had to say. Thank you. Let's go. Let me quickly take Randy in North Carolina. Randy, this is the first time you've listened?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, welcome.
First-time listener, I'm on my way to New Jersey to start my vacation, and I'm listening to you on the radio, and you're very refreshing. I like the fact that you stick to the facts and what you talk about. You don't just talk about the main topic. You're talking about a lot of things, and I was glad that you touched on how Trump was perceived when he told people on the debate that John McCain was not a war hero, and I agree with him. John McCain is not a war hero. I am sorry he's got cancer and he's sick from it. My mother died from cancer and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. No. But he is not a war hero. He flew his jet below the hard deck. He got shot down. He got imprisoned. His rich father got him out of jail, making a deal with the North Vietnamese. And he left a bunch of comrades behind. He's not a war hero.
Yeah, well, sadly, you're right about that, Randy, and I think that point has to be made, but it's so politically incorrect to make it. Listen, I'm so grateful you're listening. Thank you for that honor, and I hope that we can talk again soon. Have a wonderful next few days. Stay safe. Get politically involved. Remember, the primaries are coming up on Tuesday in those 6 states. Be responsible, and we'll talk soon. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.